This is a podcast from Minute Media.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And on The Stack, we talk about a ton of books that have come out this week, kicking it off with Justice League versus the Legion of Superheroes, number one from DC Comics, written by Brian Michael Bendis, art by Scott Godlewski. This is kicking off right after the Legion of Superheroes series that Brian Michael Bendis did with, I believe it was Ryan Sook on art, and also picking up on a lot of the Justice League stuff he's been doing. You know exactly what's going to happen for the title, but it's also kicking into this new riff on the Great Darkness saga that's been seeded throughout the DC universe for a while here. What'd you guys think about this one?
I thought it was really good art, fun cast of characters. You know, it's Bendis, so it gets a little wordy, but I think this is a solid first issue.
I'm a sucker for the Legion of Superheroes. The tank for them at all times. So, like, great to see them back. I'm curious what the deal is, and I'm a little bit, having Naomi on the Justice League, I'm like, okay. Like, that's like, you show up to work and you're like, hey, the boss is... cousin works here. It's like, well, of course.
Here's my problem with Naomi, if we're going to talk about that, a character that I really do want to like, by the way, is I don't know what her deal is. I don't know what her powers are necessarily. She doesn't know what her powers are. There's a little box that's like, powers undefined. And it's like, by the time you're on the Justice League, we should know what your powers are, you know? We should know what your place on the team is. And that's Brian Michael Bendis being a little coy because he has a long-term story with her. We know that there's going to be a second season of the comic. I'm sure we'll find out more there. But I agree with you, that's a little frustrating. And it's the same thing with this book, which, like you said, really good art. I'm happy to be on board with the direction, but I don't know what it is yet because it's a lot of... way too many characters standing around, meeting each other, talking about this, and the very typical, like, delaying tactic of, what is this? What is this thing? What's happening? What is this? What is this? Over and over again, where I'm like, don't have them. I understand it's a natural for them to be like, I don't know what's going on, but get past it. That's storytelling.
Yeah, you're telling us a story. You're not there watching this happen. And I think this has been a thing we've talked about with a lot of Bendis' stuff lately, especially since he moved to DC, where it's like, hey, man, come on. We're reading comics. We're not here hanging out in your, like, work, your office, where we can all chat about what we like about heroes. We're telling stories, and it just feels like a lot of his work is just like he is so coy with information when he didn't used to be that way. So it is a little bit of a bummer. And this Justice League team feels also especially just like, sort of like, hey, here we are hanging out. It feels like they're at a bar the whole time. And I want them to be like doing stuff. And especially when it's like the Great Darkness is coming, this story feels a lot like the last episode of Star Trek The Next Generation, something we've all understood where it's like, oh, a thing's happening in different places in time. We can get on board with that. A bunch of crazy shit happens in the DC universe. So like, it's not like we're like...
Alex hates when you go back in time.
I do?
Yeah. You were like, if there's any flashbacks of anything, you hate it.
Oh, okay. This is a different discussion. That's not.
I don't care. I'm still mad at the other discussion, so it was close enough to bring it up.
That's
fuck
great.
Yourself.
We're 3 minutes into this podcast, and you're talking about something that happened on another podcast. Very good. Love it. Hey, that's a spicy meatball, I always say. Anyway, I have no problem with flashbacks, just to clear the air there, and I have no problem with things happening in the past or anything like that. I do have a problem with Pete LePage, though. Hey! All right, why don't we move on with Daredevil, Woman Without Fear, number one from Marvel, written by Chip Zdarsky, art by Rafael de la Torre. This is kicking off of the Devil's Reign storyline, as well as the ongoing Daredevil book. And we're finding out what happens with Elektra, who is now... taking on the guise of Daredevil. The Kingpin has given somebody some sort of information on her. We don't know anything about what that is. We find out a lot more about it this issue. Pete, thanks for raising your hand. What's going on?
Well, I just got to say, I want to call it before Justin gets to a chance to call it. He loves it because we're inside Elektra's head here. You know what I mean? We get to know what she's... Yeah! We get to know what she's thinking about. Also, it's... fun to see her talk about her relationship with Daredevil and kind of like their what it is about him that kind of gets her. I think it's very cool. It's very interesting. I'm enjoying this. The art's really great. I love the kind of like the way it starts with everybody's like in kind of like this darkest kind of paneling, and it's like, ooh, the Kingpin, but he's in the shadows. I'm having a great time with this book. I think this is very interesting. It's a fun kind of take on Daredevil and what's going on currently. So I'm having a blast with it.
Yeah, I agree. What I love that Chip Zdarsky's done here is he's discovered that Elektra is just like Matt. Like, they have the same sort of worldview, the same, like, they're always sort of going through penance for what they've done before, looking backward at the same time they're trying to do the right thing. The trick was, I think, giving her that moral center that I think he's given her, so she's not that hand villain. She is Daredevil now, and so she is trying to do right for the sake of Matt, which is even a better inspiration for Daredevil as opposed to just being a hero. She's doing it to fill the shoes that came before her and maybe even to try to honor the love that she has for Matt. It's making for a great, great Daredevil run here with Elektra.
Next up, Scorched, number one from Image Comics, written by Sean Lewis and Todd McFarlane, art by Steven Segovia and Paulo Sequeira. This is a team of Spawns getting together to fight an
bunch
evil
of Spawns
that couldn't possibly beat on his own. It's tying into Sean Lewis's run over on King Spawn as well. Pete, as our resident Spawn expert, how'd you feel about this?
Well, I almost feel like I shouldn't, because there's Medieval Spawn, which is one of my, the Dark Ages Spawn was one of my favorite Spawn kind of spinoffs. So I'm all in on this.
They're called Spawnoffs, but go ahead.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Great, great. You're a very smart, intelligent, witty person.
What is going on? I said one negative thing about Book of Boba Fett, and you're
about Boba Fett.
That's right, I am. And so, this is just over-the-top Spawn action. I'm all in. This is just fun.
What I like about the take here is that if King Spawn is about an sort of all-powerful Spawn dealing with the problems of someone who is powerful and in charge, this is a bunch of Spawns that don't know what they're doing, really, and sort of are a little bit bad at it. And they're trying to track down yet another Spawn who is, like, the weapon Spawn. So there's a lot of Spawns.
A lot of Spawn-on-Spawn action.
Yeah.
It's, sounds gross it's when you good. Say it like that. Batgirl's number two from DC Comics, written by Becky Cloonan and Michael W. Conrad, art by Jorge Corona. This is following the different Batgirls as they tackle a bunch of different threats in Gotham City. Specifically, it's Cassandra Cain and Stephanie Brown are teaming up, working for Barbara Gordon. I love the dynamic of this book. It is so much fun to read, and I love how many things they're tackling at the same time.
Yeah, this is, I think that I agree. This is really fun. The two of them paired up is really fun. The kind of like we hear, like, you know, we get on the phone with Robin being like, no, I'm not being a helicopter mom. I love you too. Like, there's a lot of really great Nightwing dynamics going back and forth. Yeah, sorry. I love the art. It pulls you right into this cool, different take on them a little bit. I think it really is a fun book. I think it's solid.
Yeah, great art. I feel like this book does a good job of like feeling young, feeling like earnestly about young people, as opposed to a lot of books that are like, look, there's an app where you make videos. It's like, yeah, we get it. You're an older comic book writer trying to talk about young person stuff. This one actually walks the walk and feels like it's speaking the language in the right way. And I love these characters. The idea of Stephanie and Cassandra, two sort of opposites out there on the streets, like being the boots on the ground, is super fun.
Next up, Devil's Reign, Superior 4, number one from Marvel, written by Zach Thompson, art by David Tinto. As you can figure out from the title, this is also tying into Devil's Reign, but focusing on Otto Octavius, who has taken over the Baxter Building, opened up Reed Richards' portal to the multiverse, and brought in a pseudo-new Fantastic Four that's all made up alternate versions of him. Goes through a bunch of iterations in this book before ultimately deciding to do the opposite of a Spider-Verse and wipe out every other octopus in the universe. Justin, what did you think about this one?
This is a lot. Interesting that you went to me first, because perhaps anticipating a Pete reaction here. It is funny that this is a Devil's Reign tie-in, because it feels like this is just like a fun Doc Ock fan book, where it's just Ock on Ock on Ock, going after Ocks. I love that they made the choice to use the new Fantastic Four, which is Hulk, Ghost Rider, and Wolverine, the sort of 90s as fuck Fantastic Four running around. Might as well have Third Eye Blind playing in the background.
Pete?
Yeah, this is sacrilegious, man. This is fucking sacrilege right here. You know,
what
this
are you talking
is just
about?
This is like, you know, Doc Ock ripping off the Hulk, ripping off Ghost Rider, ripping off Wolverine.
He took over the Baxter Building when the Fantastic Four left.
Yeah, no, I got it. I heard when Alex said
that. But I'm saying
that
you don't like that.
Yeah, I'm saying is that it's actually, I wanted to do was hate this book, because when I first kind of I was like, what the fuck? But it's actually well done, and I'm kind of enjoying it.
That was such a turn right at the end there, but great to
hear. Well, I realized when you picked me last, you were like, oh, I think Pete's going to lose his fucking mind.
Yeah, because you don't like the word superior.
Yeah, I don't.
No,
I
that's
don't
what I
like
thought. I picked you last out of two people. I thought you wouldn't like it because of the tie to Superior Spider-Man, which
I didn't.
I'm
like
known
it.
As the I one on the podcast that holds on to things of the past, as you mentioned, right,
yeah,
Pete?
Yeah, you hate
not
things
you,
in the past.
But the only instance of you holding on to something from the past for no particular reason is Superior Spider-Man. So that's why.
Just so for those of you listening, while we're doing this podcast, I'm also arbitrating Pete and Alex's divorce proceedings. So sorry, it's getting a little spicy, but this is just where we are.
Yeah, I get the collection of new Fantastic Four comics. All right, Pete, final offer. You get the mansion.
No way. I want the comics.
The CBC mansion.
Reign number one from Image Comics, written by Joe Hill. Well, based on a story by Joe Hill and David M. Boer and Chris Ryle, art by Zoe Thorogood and Ashley Wood. This is based on a short story / novella by Joe Hill. I believe it's in his book Strange Weather, if I remember correctly, about
Tracks.
A world where it basically starts to rain what they eventually call nails and kills a lot of people, spins out from there. But there's some beautiful art in this book. Love the front story. Very excited to see it adapted. Also very excited to see Chris Ryle and Ashley Wood back together after Zombies versus Robots, one of my favorite titles. But what did you guys think about this one?
I thought it was really creative, really beautiful. There's a lot of very interesting characters, but anytime a comic kind of starts with like a perfect romance, I'm like, oh, this is not going to be good for one of them. And unfortunately, you know, spoilers, you know, it gets bad. But man, it's worth it for the art alone for this book. It's some really amazing panels, some really fantastic stuff in here, and it gets dark fast, but man, it's really cool.
I thought this was great. The love story that we get is so well written. It's just palpable love in a way that I haven't seen in a comic in a long time. And then like it's what happens is really well done, really horrifying. Like this is so, it's so cinematic, this story. Like, it's really great. And then the backup, I'm so psyched to see this world being poked at again. The Ashley Wood art, like, really great.
Yeah, good stuff. Next up, The Joker number 11 from DC Comics, written by James Tynion IV, Sam Johns, art by Giuseppe Bacamancoli and Belen Ortega. We're really getting to the end here as Commissioner Gordon is down but not out, trying to track down the Joker, who is in a house with a bunch of cannibals. We are getting into it and finding out what is going to happen as we get to the final conflict, presumably in the last issue. Pete.
Yes.
Did you have something you wanted to ask?
Yeah, I just wanted to, you know, try.
Joker is the clown prince of crime, and he often goes against Batman, who is a
go
man dressed
fuck
as a giant
yourself.
Bat.
I wasn't just born.
Is that the Joker from the song about being a midnight toker?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
It is.
Wow.
It is. That is
you
what this book is based on.
You are supposed to be the young one in the podcast. That was an old as fuck reference. You got to dust that off.
Explain why he's playing his music in the sun then.
Oh, my God. That's what you do.
He's a midnight toker, Pete. Why is he in the sun?
Oh, my God.
Makes no sense.
He's a vampire.
Jerry!
I just wanted to say Justin probably would call this a middle issue. You know, because they're setting things up here. But I really think this is great art. Some weird timing there with the guess who's coming to dinner after Sidney Poitier died. I did that. I was like, oh, that's not good. Yeah.
Or it was incredible timing to have it come out sort of that same way.
I don't know, man. Too soon, really fucked up. But
what
very
did you think
interesting
of the, where Joker called the guy a golden girl? That was pretty weird timing.
Yeah,
too,
that
right?
was also really weird.
And then he said that it really feels like a full house.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Come on, man.
And then he was
this
like, I did
too
it.
Soon.
I did the whole thing, and they think they caught me in the bathroom.
Yeah. Oh, man. But it's an interesting issue.
And then
the
they
plot...
said, Senator Harry Reid?
Oh my God. Yeah, so
we
it's
can
really
let that one go, I think.
Sorry, it's very guys. It's getting very interesting. I'm very excited to see how this is going to all wrap up. I've been really impressed with what's been happening in this Joker book that isn't always really about Joker.
It's almost not at all about Joker, really. This issue particularly is about an oil-based crime situation. And then Commissioner Gordon and Barbara Gordon. And I had a revelation reading this book.
Whoa.
It is weird that Barbara Gordon, like one of the smartest people in the DC universe, is the daughter of Jim Gordon, who's just like, he's sort of a detective, but he's not. Jim Gordon, and think about this. Jim Gordon, he's like, oh,
the
tough
mom
case.
Mom could be a genius. You don't know.
Yeah, what exactly is your genetic
Yeah, what are you trying
here?
To say here?
Well, in the book, he says
it trickles
like,
down. Like, Jim Gordon has a certain level of intelligence, and therefore any of his progeny will have slightly less intelligence than him. Is that what you're
Yeah, what are you trying
no,
to say?
But,
are you trying to say something about Alex's kids being dumb?
Yes, that's my go-to.
I'm pretty
no.
dumb.
What yeah. thank you. What I'm saying is, in the book, he's like, you know, Barbara, she's twice as smart as me. And mm-hmm. I was like, you know what? It is weird how smart she is. And then it made me think, is Jim that smart? Because anytime he has a hard day at work, he goes to the roof and turns on a light so his friend can help him. And then his friend shows up. And in the middle of talking, his friend leaves. And it's always like, wow, Batman's so quick and quiet. I think it's just Jim Gordon's dumb.
Oh, my God.
We're always giving Batman credit.
That's your revelation Jim Gordon's dumb.
Maybe revelation is a strong word.
Yeah, but thank you.
I do think it is funny. We are.
Why don't you? Do you think it's
Batman,
a random thought? Hey, Batman, I had a random thought about that.
Do you think Batman's doing like the Drax thing where he's just standing still and Jim's like, well, I can't see him?
Well, no, what I'm saying is like we always give Batman so much credit for being able to sneak away out of anywhere. And I'm saying maybe Jim is just.
A
just
horrible,
doesn't pay attention.
Just goes
Batman
on monologues
just like,
for too long. And
exactly. Batman just walks
ramble.
Away, and Jim's like, oh, my God, he left. And it's like, yeah, he left 40 minutes ago by walking. Mm-hmm. He said goodbye and walked out the door.
He totally zoned out thinking about monster trucks.
Oh, my
100%.
God.
100%. Yeah. That's my stance from here on out. Jim
Thanks
Gordon's
for sharing your random thought.
It's a revelation.
Okay. Well, there's a review of Joker number 11. Let's move on and talk about King Conan number 2 from Marvel, written by Jason Aaron. I don't know why anybody listens to this podcast. Art by Mahmoud Azwar. This is continuing the story of King Conan not being a king for most of it, but in fact trapped on an island with a bunch of zombies, fighting with his immortal enemy as they're both trapped there. But here we do get some flashbacks of this issue to his time as a king, realizing that his son is an old softy and needs to be hardened up a little
bit. Young softy.
Really, and I know this is classic me, I really like the flashback portions of this, not quite as into the present day stuff.
Well, Who are you?
Who am I? A person who watches and reads things on an individual basis and judges them individually versus making one broad stroke statement and sticking with it for 15 fucking years, Pete.
Okay, Alex, let's use we statements and let's talk about our own problems and not Pete's. I like this book a lot. I like both the flashbacks and the present-day stuff. The present-day stuff is just like Frank Frazetta painting after Frank Frazetta.
Yes.
We're just seeing like nonstop deep Conan art references. Yeah. And then the flashback, I like this story where Conan is like, he's legitimately having anxiety about not having fun stuff to do, stuff he thinks is fun. And then his response is to make his son, he's like, you're banished. Go do stuff in the world. Alex, do you plan on doing that with your son?
Absolutely. I'm eventually going to banish him into the wilderness and say, good, do podcasts. And until you do 15 years of podcasts, don't come home.
I think that's 100% right.
It is this thing where he's sitting there thinking about all that he's accomplished in his life. And then he looks at his son who literally has anything that he wants at any time of the day. And he's like, well, this guy's not ready for the world. I'm not doing a good job raising him. I was too busy being in Conan to like care about this kid. And now I do care. So I'm going to kick them out and have them get some life experience.
That's why we made you move to Philadelphia.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And I'm going to earn my way back.
Until you make it to every Philly cheesesteak place, you're not welcome back in New York.
Oh, man, that's going to be a long time. But I'm working my way
through. And a lot of salt, a lot of sodium content.
Yeah, I know. I'm in trouble. But I do think it's an interesting idea. It's fun to kind of like see Conan struggle with being a father, you know? A little harsh, kind of reminds me of 300 a little bit, where, you know, they kick out all the kids and they got to fight their way back. But I think Jason Aaron's doing a great job. There's a lot of awesome splash page art, really cool moments. This is a cool Conan book.
Next up, Stillwater, number 12 from Image Comics, written by Chip Zdarsky, art by Ramon K. Perez. In this issue, big things happen and big things change in the town. What did you guys think about this one?
This story is great. I love it, love the art, and it feels like it is sort of, up until this issue, it's been a little bit like there's this big problem, and we keep going in like tiny circles coming back to like, how are we going to deal with this problem? The fact that the town, you live forever if you're in the town, and you leave the town, they don't want outsiders in, and it feels like we're sort of on that idea, and there's a power struggle for people trying to control what the town does. And then the twist in this issue changes everything in a way that I thought was really cool and it really opens up the world and the story going forward.
Pete?
I think the cool reveal here is that, you know, the zoning board is the people who have all the power. You know what I mean? The people who make the little lines in the map really control the fate of the world, and they kind of realize that in this issue.
You're talking about gerrymandering.
Yeah. Yeah, I am.
Jerry! Oh,
my God. That's Jerry pandering, Alex.
Yeah, that's a little different. Right. All right, we are going to move it over to this week's sponsor, which is the Blindsided podcast from the Players Tribune. Given how they play the game, you might not think that professional athletes are dealing with mental health issues, but that's exactly what the Players Tribune is tackling with their first ever mental health podcast, Blindsided, hosted by former NHL goalie Corey Hirsch and psychiatrist Dr. Diane McIntosh. The show will share the moments for a variety of athletes when everything changed for them and mental health became the most important focus of their lives. Blindsided allows listeners to have an understanding of the different types of mental health challenges people faced, whether you're a professional athlete or not. Guests this season include Kevin Love, Paul Bissonnette, and Kurt Warner. Blindsided dives in deeper. It gets clinical and allows listeners to leave with an understanding of the different varieties of mental health challenges people face, why they appear, and how athletes in particular face them down. Blindsided is a sports podcast, not only for people who follow sports, but also for those who don't.
And sounds great, man.
It does sound great. I'm very excited to check it out. I'm also excited to check out our next title, which is Detective Comics number 1048 from DC Comics, written by Mariko Tamaki and Matthew Rosenberg, art by Ivan Rice and Fernando Blanco. The front story here is continuing the story of Arkham Tower, the new totally awesome mental health facility. That is going to completely fall apart very, very soon, as we've already seen it. And the backup story is following a kid who saw a Joker-Batman fight and took away the wrong lessons. Now, Pete, I know you've been super into this title. What did you think about this one?
Yeah, we're kind of getting this interesting story of, hey, look at all these criminals who are totally fine. We see Mr. Freeze getting an iced coffee. You see what he did there?
But that seems totally good. I don't know what the worry is.
Well, the worry is that
you think it's too expensive, the coffee?
No, I'm worried that
it's mostly ice. You're paying like $4 or $5 or something.
You're getting
like
ripped
that.
Off. I mean, Mr. Freezes.
Plus, just get a regular coffee and let it sit out for a while.
Exactly, freeze it. It's his whole thing.
Oh my god!
He could just freeze a regular coffee.
You guys are missing the point. Okay, there are all these supervillains just walking around a tower, all willy nilly. It seems like it's going to go horribly wrong at any minute. And then the person who is supposed to have this under control is revealed through flashbacks that we know Salvin hates, is just this thing of like, oh, I'm not doing good. I'm doing things horribly. So it's just a time bomb. And this poor tower is going down.
I would just like to mention, I'm really loving the stuff that's taking place in the past here in particular. Go ahead, Justin.
Yeah, no, and the beautiful thing about stories are that when they – a really Aristotelian understanding of stories, they cannot exist. They have to be told in one 24-hour period. No time dashing forward or backward. That's a real story. Yeah, that's a real story.
In all seriousness, though, I will say that, like I said about the last issue, I loved – how it jumped ahead to the point where the tower was falling apart. I love how we jump back here and we don't necessarily get the events that are leading directly towards that, but we get unrelated events where Batwoman is going on a job interview for this tower. They're all aware that something is wrong. They're like, yeah, there's messed up stuff happening here. We just don't know what it is yet. And it is really tying into one of the things, and it's such a basic thing, but I like it when Detective Comics has them being detectives, which happens so relatively rarely. Most of the time, like we've talked about, it's them solving a mystery where they're like, this penguin seems to indicate the penguin. Let's go beat up the penguin. And that's the whole mystery. But here, there legit is a mystery of what is going on with Tobias Ware, the guy who is running the place. What is he giving the patients? What is wrong with the patients? Who is this new Harley Quinn who is dressed like Harley Quinn? Lots of stuff going on there, as well as, of course, the bigger mystery of how do we end up in a place where Arkham Tower is on fire and Tobias Ware is being thrown out the window to his death. So it's great. I'm loving this story right now.
I agree. It feels like we are along for the ride of the mystery, which is hard to do.
Yeah. Next up, Dark Ages number 4 from Marvel, written by Tom Taylor, art by Ivan Coelho. This is continuing the story of a Marvel universe that has no power. And in this issue, they're rowing a S.H.I.E.L.D. helicarrier all the way to Europe to stop Apocalypse, literal character apocalypse, not just the figurative apocalypse.
Oh,
and as you might expect, things do not go that well.
Yep. I think this is really he's not going to throw it to anybody.
On to the next review.
I thought you would throw it to somebody, but okay. This is very cool. There's a lot of great cameos, a lot of fun kind of characters. I also like the use of like They say that their ship is colossal, and then if you look, Colossus is kind of like lifting up chains and stuff in the background. I was like, oh, I see what you did there, Marvel. Also, we get a Black Panther. Oh, man, every time I see him now, it's just like, huh. But this is exciting. I like what's the setting up. There's also Fing Fam Foom. It shows up. Really cool use of Ghost Rider in this. I'm trying not to spoil everything. I think this is a blast
Ghost
of
Raiders.
Oh, you spoiled it. But yeah, this is just a blast of a comic. Really over the top and a lot of fun.
It's fun that Tom Taylor's doing this book, and isn't he doing the medieval book over at DC as well at the same time?
Yep.
So that's great. And these have the similar creative engines behind them and creative energy, but not but in completely different worlds. These stories aren't alike per se, but I love both of them, and just a ton of like interesting, fun choices where we get to see the Marvel Universe in a totally new frame.
Yep.
What's the furthest place of here from here? Number three from Image Comics, written by Matthew Rosenberg, art by Tyler Boss. In this issue, our teens on the run looking for their fellow teen end up at a house that is filled with other teens who are dressed like old people. This book is great. I love every issue of this book so far.
Me too. It's super fun, and there's a dark tension over everything. But what I love about it the most is the format. Like, the way we're getting these very short chapters with the titles being a line pulled from the story, the little short chapter you're about to read, it really keeps the pace up in a way that makes the story really poppy and fun.
This is just like creepy and weird in all the right ways. It's really a very interesting comic, which is impressive after we've read comics for so long. Yeah, there's a ton of stuff going on, but it's also really artistically well put together. I also love the little like character page in the front. This is a great package.
Robin and Batman, number three from DC Comics. You love a good package, Pete. Written by Jeff Lemire, Justin. Art by Dustin Nguyen. This is the final issue of this prestige format book, showing a young Dick Grayson and how he becomes the Robin that we all know he can be. I thought this was great. If you didn't read this, not only were the individual issues really good, but hopefully they are going to collect this in a trade, because it's just 100%. A very, very good story. What'd you guys think about the finale here?
This is going to be a great trade. Beautiful art. It feels like one of the most intimate versions of the Dick Grayson origin Robin story that I've read. Like, you're really along with him and really believe his choice that informs his character as Robin and as Nightwing, where he's always looking upward, avoiding the darkness to chase the light. I thought just thematically it was great, and Killer Croc's a great villain. The connection they made here between he and Dick Grayson was great. Like, it was just really smart choices throughout and beautiful art.
Yeah, all the feels in this issue is just so fantastic.
I want to join the circus.
The art is just absolutely beautiful. It's like a watercolor painting come to life. It's just glorious.
Next up, The Thing, number three from Marvel, written by Walter Mosley, art by Tom Riley. In this issue, The Thing is out of the underground, but he's fighting the champion of the universe instead. And a lot more things are going down, including a new lady love that he has. Now, Pete, I'm curious to hear from you. You're usually very tied to classic romances. And here, this is The Thing, not with Alicia, but with a new woman. How are you feeling?
Yeah, so I'm glad you pointed that out. It feels a little weird, but this is so artistically fantastic and really cool. It's a little outside the pocket, so I'm allowing it. It's sweet. It's nice to see The Thing kind of exploring in this way, and I love the little kid and the questions that he has for the champion there. I really enjoy this. I don't want it to, you know, overshadow Ben's real love and all that kind of stuff that we've all come accustomed to. But it's a nice little break for what it is. I just think artistically it's doing so many great things that I don't mind.
Yeah, I mean, I really like this. It feels so such a fresh take on the thing that I'm almost like, I keep wondering if it's real. It feels so different. But I really like the sort of world he's in. His romance feels like she's got some secrets. The kid's got some secrets. These people that keep coming for him feel like they are not doing it for a reason. He doesn't seem to know what's happening, and he doesn't seem to be questioning it. So there's just a lot going on here in a way that feels very fresh.
I agree. I really like this book. I think it's the tone of it that feels off kilter the entire time, but in a really intriguing way that works. Yeah. And it matches very nicely with Tom Riley's art. Now, I do have a question for you guys, and Pete, I guess for you in particular, since you are both into the Alicia thing romance and also this new woman and the thing. Pete, if you could answer this one for me, how does the thing have sex?
Oh my God, dude. Who are you?
I mean, because he's a pretty large guy and he's made out of stone, right? So wouldn't he kill her?
Dude, what is your deal, bro?
Well, I'm just asking a question.
That's a normal question. That's a normal question.
It's not a normal question.
No, it's an inquisitive question from a 10-year-old boy.
What are we in Mallrats over here?
You've never thought about this.
No.
Never?
Never.
They literally, in this issue, the thing has sex. Yeah. And you didn't think about it then?
She even says,
I like it rough. She says that line.
Yeah. I read the comic.
So you must have thought about it then.
I assume, like, let's not. I'm not going to get into this with you.
Pete, we're trying to pierce your rocky exterior and get to the soft.
You're the self-professed sexpert on the podcast. So.
Oh my God!
You're our Dr. Drew on Loveline. Well, I think
you're the
Adam
Carolla.
No, you're the Corolla, and oh, I'm always just curious about sex. As we know, the thing once a year turns into a human, mm-hmm. but the rest of the year, his genitals are human. He's
okay. That's why he wears the blue undies, right?
He's got to cover that up. He's got to cover up his human fleshy genitals. Ween. Yep.
Okay. I'll buy that. That's a great explanation. Thank you, Justin.
No prize in continuity.
Unbelievable.
Next up, the Department of Truth, number 15 from Image Comics, written by James Todd of the Fourth, art by David Romero. In this issue, we explore yet another weird mystery in the world, which is how does the thing have sex?
No, come on.
That's the Department of Truth. Yeah. I want to be a part of it.
No, we're exploring Mothman in this issue, mostly through text and splash pages of art. Justin, you've been loving this book. What did you think about this issue?
I do like this book. And the sort of pace of this book has slowed down a bit, and they're really like letting it spread out and exploring sort of the edges of this world. And this issue feels like it's doing that while sort of furthering the danger and the threat both within and without the Department of Truth, with Lee Harvey Oswald being the focus here. And I just love the way they keep sort of defining the rules of what it means to have a portion of the population believe in something so hard that it manifests. And to really define that, and how, like, it's almost like when you rub a lamp and have a genie come out, you have to be very specific with your wish, otherwise you don't quite get it. Like a monkey's paw situation. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm talking about. You guys both have had monkey's paws.
Yeah. I found a genie once and I wished for a monkey's paw, and instead gave me an elephant's.
That's hoof. The worst. Hoof? Is that what you wanted to say? An elephant's hoof?
You were going to say trunk. You were going to say trunk.
No, I don't think he was going to say trunk either.
Pete?
Yeah, I think this is just creepy in all the right ways. That kind of like slick back hair guy when he's like gets closer and closer. Fantastically creepy. This continues to be such a weird but cool book. This continues to impress. It's a little bit of like when I read, I'm like, what? But I'm still enjoying it.
Next up, Hell Sonia, number one from Dynamite, written by Christopher Hastings, art by Pasquale
Chris Hastings.
Multiverse is all the rage these days with Spider-Man.
Yes, I did not expect to see the multiverse in here.
Mm-hmm. And we are getting a bunch of different Sonias of different colors and flavors coming together to fight a big evil. Pete, you like Chris Hastings and you generally like Red Sonia. What do you think about this one?
Yeah, I think this is just, Chris Hastings is a very creative, funny, imaginative person. So it's nice to see his take on this. And, with Red Sonja, with like a lot of characters like this, you know, I don't want it just to be dumb TNA. I think we're over that. So it's nice to get some interesting, cool ideas.
Yeah. Justin?
Yeah, I mean, this feels like Red Sonja meets the Power Rangers in a way, or the Green Lantern Light Spectrum meets Ilyana from the X-Men in Hell. Like, there's just like so many things from comic book, different areas of comic book fandom coming together here in a very fun way.
Undiscovered Country, number 18 from Image Comics, written by Scott Snyder and Charles Soule, art by Giuseppe Camicoli and Leonardo Marcello Grassi. In this issue, we are wrapping up the arc of, oh my God, I really got to look these up beforehand because I keep forgetting what land they're in. This is Imagination or Inspiration or something like that. But basically, they're fighting the Crossroads Devil and all the ideas from the history of America. They need to come up with a song, and spoiler here, but the very fun twist of this issue is the guy who's trying to come up with the greatest song, he's like, I don't know, I basically ripped off Hamilton, and then throws it into the ocean, which, fun joke. And then we get some nice twists at the end there to set up the next arc. Pete, what'd you think about this one?
Yeah, this continues to be super weird and creative and kind of like very interesting kind of take on the history. So it's just creepy and weird enough and entertaining enough that it continues to be a great story. I constantly am impressed with the swings that this comic is taking and all the places it goes. It continues to be just, what the fuck's going to happen? What kind of character are you going to run into? How are we going to get out of this? Impressive.
Yeah, I love the Crossroads Devil as a villain here. As we say all the time, this comic book has just a million ideas on the table in the toy box that is constantly shaking up. And this issue, they're like, all right, we're done with all that other stuff. Now we're moving on to these next ideas. I'm excited by sort of the two pages we get at the end and where we're headed with this story.
Agreed. Next up, Buffy the Last Vampire Slayer, number two from Boom Studios, written by Casey Gilley, art by Joe Jaro. This takes place in not a post-apocalyptic world, but a future world where Buffy is, as the title says, the last vampire. Vampires have pretty much not exactly taken over the world, but come to an uneasy peace with the world. And outlawed slayers is one of the first things they've done. And in this issue, Buffy discovers she's not actually the last slayer. In fact, the daughter of Willow and Tara is also a slayer and has come to find her. And things get predictably messed up from there. I'll tell you what, I've been kind of mixed on a lot of the Buffy stuff from Boom Studios. This is great.
Well, yeah. I agree. This is much better than the other stuff I think we've seen lately. And I think what the difference here is, it's a big premise that takes us away from the show. And then when they drop in pieces of the show, I think it really pops. And we're really with Buffy throughout this ride. When I feel like in the past, it felt like it was in the show and then things would move away from it and heighten. And it felt like I couldn't get my hands around it. And this feels very much like we're meeting our older friends with every issue that we read.
Yeah, it really feels like it's hit a stride and some great ideas here. Also, it's interesting to see Buffy kind of being a dick. You know, she's laughing at this kid's face, like her name,
you know, she's
like
older.
All these
when
different
you get
things.
Older, I don't know if you're familiar, Pete, but when you get older, you start to get a little more less tolerant of your everyday things.
And you're talking about the royal you when you look at me and say
the royal
you.
That's
right.
Okay, classic term, the royal you.
All right.
The royal Pete.
Yep. Last but not least, Nyx number 3 from Dynamite, written by Christos Gage, art by Mark Borstel. In this issue, Nyx, our fire demon, chaos demon, whatever, is hanging out with Vampirella, a character that she's had some on off again fights with and team ups with. And this issue, they go to a bunch of bars and get drunk together. Like I said about the previous two issues, Christos Gage is just writing the crap out of this book and making it really enjoyable and fun to read, despite the initial TNA premise.
I agree. It is a fun read. Like, they go out and party in a way. We get to learn more. Like, Vampirella has been a comic forever that we've occasionally covered and read. And, like, I'm like, you don't really learn much about her. She's always just, like, in a bad situation with a million problems or demons or whatever she has to fight. And in this, it felt like we actually got to hang out with these characters, and they felt like real characters. So, like, all the credit to Christos Gage for making this book, like, a real comic and real fun.
Pete?
Yeah. Agreed.
Yes.
Oh, you hit your limit there.
I'm the one that hangs on to things. And you're the one that supports our podcast, The Royal You, if you will, at patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Crowdcast and YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about comic books. iTunes, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show at Comic Book Live on Twitter, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast, and many more. Until next time, we'll see you at the comic book shop. Comic book